are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Joining me for the premiere of Breaking Barriers with host Jennifer D. Giles. I am your host, and what Up to Me Radio can promise you is that every show will deliver original content you won't be able to hear anywhere else but right here on Breaking Barriers. And in keeping with Up to Me Radio's promise to listeners of all of our shows, the producers of Breaking Barriers curate content to inspire, uplift, and empower you to be better and do better. We're launching this show at an unprecedented time in our country and indeed the world. The COVID-19 pandemic is affecting nearly every aspect of life as we know it and impacting us in ways that we could not have imagined just a few weeks ago. We considered waiting to premiere, but when we thought about it, we decided that now is the time. This is the moment to launch a show that enables us to break through barriers, those real and those that sometimes only reside within us, barriers that can keep us from moving into our purpose or living in our truth or making decisions that keep us in control of our lives. The guest for my premiere show is going to give us some critical information to help us do just that, take control of our lives, even in these uncertain times and the tragic pandemic we are experiencing. You won't want to miss what she has to tell us. We will be right back. Stay with us.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
And we're back. Every day we're hearing stories of people losing loved ones to the coronavirus. Thousands of husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, grandparents, and even children have lost their battle with COVID-19. This virus does not discriminate. Many of the losses are happening so quickly, it is showing us just how urgent it is to have an estate plan prepared. Estate planning is something many of us do not want to think about, let alone talk about. I know I'm right there with you. Well, my guest likes to refer to ensuring our affairs are in order as the business of living. If you or someone you love doesn't have an estate plan in place, we're going to spend some time today talking about why it is something we all absolutely must do sooner than later. We could think of no better time to talk with a legal expert on these matters than the global health crisis we are experiencing and the uncertain times we're living in. We're going to break through those barriers of fear, apathy, procrastination, lack of time, and all those other little things that keep us from taking control and planning for life and what comes next for all of us. Althea DeBar Johnson is an attorney in private practice and founder of the law firm of Althea DeBar Johnson, PC. It is one of Atlanta's most trusted firms for estate planning, which includes wills, trust, medical advance directives, financial power of attorney, probate administration, guardianship, and conservatorship. She is a former ad hoc judge for DeKalb County, Georgia, near Atlanta. She is also a columnist for Up to Me magazine, a frequent guest on radio, and a sought-after authority on estate planning. Althea, welcome and thank you for being here for our premiere show. This is going to be an important conversation.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here on this first podcast, Breaking Barriers. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited to take a deep dive into the must-do planning for the unexpected and the expected curves that life can throw us. So let's dig right in. As I said at the top of the show, the pandemic is taking lives, thousands of lives, and taking far too many of them too quickly, often without time for the person to speak with loved ones. It's just literally I'm hearing stories about people going into the hospital and the very next day they have passed away. And of course, once a person enters the hospital, they are not able to speak with loved ones anymore. They're being kept away for good reason. This takes us into the first topic in our conversation today, Althea. And you like to tell people that preparing a will must be thought about very broadly. You like to tell us that to think broader than preparing a will when we are doing estate planning. You call it lifetime planning and death time planning. And I wonder if we could begin there and get some clarity around what is lifetime planning and what is death time planning.
Sure. When people think about estate planning, the first thing that most normally comes to a person's mind is about death. But I want people to look at it as estate planning being lifetime planning and death time planning. We plan for those situations that we can't have no control of, but we need someone to act on our behalf. So that's the lifetime piece of this estate planning. Of course, that's the death time piece when we pass away, and now someone's in charge of handling and managing our estate. So there is a lifetime planning and some documents that we need to put into place for those times, and, of course, our death time planning.
So thank you for that. With the lifetime planning, one thing that I know that you speak with your clients about in terms of planning for lifetime is the Medical Advance Directive. So often we've heard that term. When my mom went into the hospital, one of the first things that the medical officials ask us is if she had a medical advance directive. So perhaps we can start there with talking about what it is and why you need one, even if you're a young person, even if you're completely healthy, even if you're married. Why is it so important for us all to have a medical advance directive?
Okay. When we are talking, again, about estate planning, there's two parts to the lifetime planning, which includes the medical advance directive. And as a medical advance directive, what you are basically trying to do is prepare this legal document that informs others of your wishes about your health care in the event you can't communicate those wishes to others. And as an advanced care directive, you are basically selecting someone you know to make those decisions and have the authority to talk to doctors, healthcare professionals about your medical condition and to make those decisions about placement, treatment, and anything that relates to your health care and the records that are involved. Well, most people think, especially young folks, think that they don't need an advanced health care director. But a young person needs it because I had a client, and I'll just give you an example. I had a client who was a professional horse driver. And he had gotten into an accident where he fell the horse foot landed on his head, and he became brain damaged. His brain was damaged. He was transported to Shepherd Medical Center, but his mom was living in France. And the doctors wanted to make certain decisions about his medical care, and they could not. And, of course, the mother came back. She tried to make certain decisions also. But this young man was 25 years old, which means if you're over the age of 18, you can make your own decisions. You are an adult. Well, the mother, in order to help her son, she had to go to the probate court, file an emergency petition to be his guardian in order for her to make health care decisions on behalf of her son, to be able to talk to the doctors and the health care professionals about treatment, where he should be placed after Shepherd Medical Center, all of those kinds of decisions. Of course, most people think that, well, he's my child. I should be able to legally make those decisions, but that's not
true. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think most of us would believe that we automatically would have that right because he's not married. I'm his mom. I'm his next of kin. So I automatically, by virtue of the fact that, this is my son, I automatically have the right to make decisions about, you know, his health care. And you're saying that is not true.
That is not true because, again, in the state of Georgia, when you turn 18, you are considered an adult. And even if you are healthy, sometimes we may not have any known medical conditions that we may be aware of, but things happen to us, such as we may get into an accident. And
yes,
we are taken to the hospital. We are unconscious. We can't make any decisions. So who shall make those decisions on your behalf? And a lot of times the healthcare professionals, the doctors don't know whether or not you're married or you're single, what is going on. We are a litigious society. So a lot of times doctors and healthcare professionals want to know, do you have the legal authority to make those decisions on behalf of loved ones? And even if they are a spouse, and most normally you would think that the doctors will listen to the spouse who's coming in and saying that this is what I want to happen, this is what I want to happen. But again,
sure.
The doctors, they don't know your family circumstances. They don't know if you are estranged. You haven't seen each other in years. They have no idea. So that's why it's not just normal anymore, or they just take it for granted that you are the person to make those legal authorities, and they're asking you to provide that to them or to go to court and get appointed to make those decisions.
So what you just said really brings two questions to mind that I think we all want to hear more about. First of all, how do we go about deciding who should have the authority to make those decisions? You mentioned something a moment ago about, you know, perhaps you and a spouse are estranged, and even if you're not estranged, maybe that person isn't the best one to make a decision in these kinds of circumstances, especially if the circumstances come suddenly, like in the case of, you know, COVID or in the accident that you just shared with
mm-hmm.
us. So could you talk a little bit about what you say to clients when they're trying to make that decision?
Well, hopefully if I have clients that are coming in to make their estate planning, we talk about the importance of having an advanced care director, but I also talk about the importance of choosing the right agent, choosing the right person who can make the tough decisions if they come about. Again, you may be in an accident, And normally we would like to choose our spouse if that's the person, or a child, a responsible child. And that may be fine, but can that person make those important decisions for you? Because sometimes we know and understand that it's hard making medical or life-changing decisions for a loved one. So we may need
sure.
to put someone who can make those kinds of decisions, who can talk rationally to the healthcare professional without getting too emotional and making those decisions. But if there's a situation where a person didn't have the chance to prepare or execute an advanced healthcare directive, then that may mean going to the probate court. And the probate court is going to decide who is the best person to be the guardian or the person to make those kinds of healthcare decisions, treatment, where a person needs to be placed, the daily living and decisions for that person. And sometimes that may not be the spouse because, again, the spouse may have some ulterior motives. That spouse may not be well enough, him or herself, to carry on those duties and functions that are required as a guardian for this incapacitated adult. It may not be any of the children. There may be conflict, so much conflict going on amongst the family that the court will decide, well, we'll just appoint the Department of Aging to manage this situation. And that has happened a lot.
Wow. This really takes me into back to the conversation that we were having when we first started about making sure that your voice is heard even when you are voiceless. Because if you do go to court, the probate court, or that circumstance comes up that someone in your family has to go to probate court to get permission, then you've really lost your power, if you will, because a judge is making the decision. You're no longer able to do that. That's why the planning is so important.
That's why the planning is so important, because, again, the judge doesn't know all of the family dynamics. That person who's filing to become the guardian may be the best person, and the court may appoint that person. But when you have other family members coming in objecting to that appointment, and the court can't quite recognize or determine who should be the best person to make those decisions, that's why sometimes a neutral person is appointed. And then the Department of Aging can have that opportunity to kind of sort through and maybe make a determination and report back to the court as to who should make those decisions after the department has an opportunity to do further investigation or bring the family together and discuss. Listen, we don't want to carry on this function as the guardian. So family members, you couldn't decide before. Can we all come together and decide after some investigation, observation on this person, that this is a person who should be the guardian, and we can report that to the court and let the court know that now the family has come together. We have selected the best person. This is who we want. And could you substitute the Department of Aging for this individual?
Right. This is so important. And on a personal note, when my mom became ill, it was rather sudden. And, you know, she did not have the advanced directive. And you come together with your family. You know, all of us siblings came together. And at that time, emotions are so raw that it's can be difficult to make a good decision. And then if there's differences of opinion and the direction to go, it just adds to an already very, very t- tough situation. So this is this information, I'm going to say this 100 times while we're talking. This mm-hmm. information is so valuable. So I'd like to, if we could move away from medical advanced directives, we've got great information there that I think everyone will give them some food for thought. But if we could talk about the other aspect of lifetime planning, and that is the financial power of attorney. Let's talk about what it is and what it is not.
Again, the financial power of attorney is another legal document where you select a person, agent, to make financial and business decisions on your behalf, especially when you are unable, to make those important financial decisions for yourself. The financial power of attorney really has to do with managing your financial and business affairs, while a bank healthcare director gives the person authority to make medical and health decisions. So there are two separate documents that allows a person or gives a person authority to do two distinct separate things.
So the financial power of attorney, as you mentioned, is also it's one of those lifetime documents, but in terms of how you go about actually doing the financial power of attorney paperwork, how would I begin to do that if I saw the need that someone was going to need to have my power of attorney, or I could see that I needed to have someone else's power of attorney? What are the steps that need to take place in order to make that come to fruition?
Well, what I will suggest to anyone is to go talk to a probate and estate planning attorney. And during that consultation or conversation with the attorney, he or she will talk about these lifetime planning documents. Because I want you to notice that these documents are prepared and executed and deal with situations while you are still alive. It has nothing to do with one's death. So these decisions, these documents are in place to help that individual while they are alive, but however cannot make certain decisions. It doesn't mean that you're going to die.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that something else terrible is going to happen to you, but you want to be prepared if you cannot act on your own behalf. So we talk about when we are decided who should be the agent, who should that person be who can manage your financial affairs and that you can trust? Because that is the most important piece. What I tell my clients is that document, you give that person the power to go and talk to people at the bank, to talk to your insurance agent, to deal with your properties, if you're managing properties, to file lawsuits if necessary under the financial power of attorney, to deal with anything as far as your money, your assets are concerned. And you want to choose an individual that knows what he or she is doing. This is about business. This is not an emotional, sentimental decision to make about an agent. Because you need to observe or to know that if that person that you're choosing can handle his or her own financial affairs, that is the person you want. Because if they can't handle theirs, they will not be able to handle yours. And you
that
will have
critical. That is a critical piece of advice. Because the natural inclination for us as human beings is to choose an agent, someone that we're close to, you know, a sister, a spouse, a child, and that person, where relationship might be wonderful, but they may not be the best person to be in charge of your financial affairs if you become unable to do so. I think when we spoke before we came on air, we were talking about how a person who is chosen to be an agent needs to be able to pay your bills on time, make sure that other financial things are taken care of, like the utilities in your right. home if you're going to be away from your home for a good bit of time. And I think if we could talk a little bit about that, if you could tell us
sure.
a story. You have so many examples of,
oh,
of people who have made good decisions and people who have made not so good decisions. And I'm wondering if you could share a story or two with us that our listeners could learn from.
Sure. I had a couple to come into the office, and of course they want their estate plan. And the wife wanted to make the husband her financial power of attorney agent. And I had to sit there and tell them both, because they were both in my office together at the same time, that I didn't think it was a very good idea for the husband to be the financial power attorney. Not that I didn't think he was trustworthy or he couldn't do the job, but physically he could not do the job because he recently had a stroke. And
oh,
it caused
understood.
Him to, yeah, he had a stroke. He was had some physical challenges. It didn't appear that it was going to get better soon because he was already elderly, that it was going to probably get worse. So I suggested to them both that you may need to pick another individual, maybe one of your children who's responsible, maybe a dear friend who might be responsible. But it was not a good idea for him to be the agent because he had some challenges, physical challenges.
Yes.
You can barely understand what he was saying, and you had to be real patient in understanding or communicating with him. And the probability of him getting better in the future just didn't seem likely. And then we have to talk about those situations where, again, choosing the wrong person can cause financial damage for you. I had a situation where this lady had this individual, or she was the agent for this individual. She had a financial power of attorney. Unfortunately, that individual passed away, and she thought that she could still use that financial power of attorney to handle that person's business after death. We had to go
that
to mediation.
That's a great point.
Yes. We had to go to mediation. We had to resolve the issue because she was still handling that person's bank account, never told the bank that the person was deceased. She was managing and trying to sell property, and we had to inform her that that was illegal, that she can possibly be criminally prosecuted, and we need those funds back into that person's estate. So sometimes we have chose the wrong person.
Yes.
We are unduly influenced by people saying that they can handle your affairs and they really can't.
And that raises another important point as I'm listening to this. When a person
mm-hmm.
is selected to be the agent, that person needs to have a clear understanding of what his or her legal rights are and when those legal rights end. For example, many people, and including me before we spoke, didn't realize that once a person is deceased, that the power of attorney terminates immediately.
It terminates immediately.
Yes, so I can't continue to, you know, if I had the right to pay bills or access the bank account, I can no longer do that, and in fact, could risk even really getting into some trouble.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't understand that, but that's why it's important when you come to someone like myself, I explain that to not only my clients, but the agents. And what Georgia has effectively done for the last, or changed the law a little bit as far as it relates to financial power of attorney, they have a form or a document that the agent must sign and clearly understand what their legal duties are, what they really can and cannot do. They have to sign, and if they do something improper, they cannot say that they wasn't aware, wasn't informed, and, of course, can become legally liable for mismanaging a person's funds. And what I also try to do or explain to my clients is that you can make your financial power of attorney conditional. And what do I mean by that? Of course, my husband, he is my agent for my financial power of attorney. But right now, I can manage and handle everything that I need to manage and handle. And I have a provision in that document which states, only if two of my treating physicians state in a written affidavit that I cannot handle my legal affairs, that is when his authority begins. So if there's not two, it is. If those two medical doctors or treating physicians at the time that I need some assistance state in a written affidavit that I cannot manage my affairs, that's when my husband can act on my behalf, go to the bank, do what needs to be done for me from a financial point of view. Now, when I recover or I get better, if I state to my husband, no, I can handle my financial affairs, or if one of those doctors state in a written affidavit that she can handle her financial affairs, that's when his authority stops. So it can be conditional.
I did not realize that, and I don't think a lot of people realize that a power of attorney could be conditional. And more importantly, why you need to think about adding some conditions to the financial power of attorney, because so often things will happen, accidents, anything could happen that is unexpected. We all think from day to day that we're going to be able to make these decisions and take care of ourselves, but the fact of the matter is life happens, and life sometimes happens very quickly and very tragically and takes these unexpected turns. So the conversation that we're having is so important for everyone. Everyone over the age of 18 really needs to listen to what you're saying and take some action on what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to take us into another area of talking about estate planning, Althea, and that is what you call death time planning. You call it a roadmap for our family members to follow once we're gone. And I'd like to start by just briefly asking you to tell us the difference between a will and a trust so that we're clear.
Okay. So basically, I'm just going to talk in basic terms because, of course, there's trust and there's so many kinds of trust. But the basic difference between a will is a will does not come into effect until a person passes away. So we can have a document. It is purportedly our will. We can walk around with our will in our hands all day long, but it does not become effective until we pass away. A trust is a little different. A trust can operate and be used while we are alive and after our death. So it's basically a document. It's kind of, if we can kind of look at it as a business entity that we have set up for the benefit of someone else while we are alive, and these beneficiaries, whoever they may be, can profit or benefit from funds that are in that trust or in that entity, or that trust can be created after we die. That's basically kind of the difference. The trust really sets up and creates an entity.
Understood.
And it doesn't come into, there's not a valid trust unless there are some assets in the trust. So we can have a document. And unless you put some assets in that trust, then it's not a valid trust.
Got it. And actually, we're going to take a deeper dive into trust on the next Breaking Barriers, when we will be joined by Althea's law partner, Tamara Wood, who is an attorney specializing in complex trust and tax matters. And since we have a little bit of an extension on our taxes this year due to the pandemic, we thought it would be a great time to bring her in to talk about what to do in these months before the July 15th deadline. But for now, back to the will. Could you tell us what a will consists of and some important first steps we should all be thinking about?
Okay, so basically a will, again, it's a document where you have outlined your intentions of how your assets should be disposed of, transferred to after you have passed away. And some of the things that we should be talking about or thinking about when we want to set up our will is kind of get our budget together, our assets together, what are our liabilities, what is it that we own. And those are the steps. If we have incapacitated adult children, if we have children, if we have anything of value, we want to start thinking about that and how do we want those assets to pass on or to be beneficial to our family members. So those are the things that we should be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. There's this school of thought that people, and I'm one of them, I have this school of thought too, mm-hmm. that you don't need a will unless you're wealthy. Only wealthy people need wills. But one thing I learned from you is that if you have any assets at all, if you have an apartment that has furniture, if you own an automobile, if you have a bank account, if you have anything that is a tangible possession, that is something that we need to be thinking about when we might say to ourselves, I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a huge amount of things, so I don't need a will.
Right. Well, I tell my clients, I'll tell anyone, we all have, most of us, the majority of us, have assets. And I think that the most important asset that you may have are your children. So we need to plan how to protect and provide for them in the event that either we become incapacitated or we suddenly pass away or we pass away. So to me, your children are your most important asset. But you also have other things such as you may have a car, jewelry, checking and savings account, a home, antiques, fine art, 401k plan,
sure.
investment, stocks, bonds, anything that you have or you have that you consider a value, you have assets. Anything that you work hard for, and you will be upset if you lost them. That's value. So we all have
a great way to think of
some type of asset. Yes.
So this information is so very valuable, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation, but we need to take just a short break. But before we do, Could you give us just three really quick takeaways as to those initial steps we need to take before we walk into that attorney's office to begin this the will development process?
Sure. I think the three steps that we should all be thinking about is who or what are we trying to protect by having a will? Number two,
okay.
I think that what do we want to do with our assets? Who should they go to and why? And thirdly, who do you want to manage your affairs after you pass away?
Great advice. Althea, how can people reach you or learn more about your firm? Is there a number or a website?
Of course. I have a website, and that's www.adjpclaw.com. And my office number is 404-584-5555.
Great. Thank you. We'll be right back with probate attorney Althea DeBar Johnson talking to us today about something important to every man, woman, and child, the business of living. Stay with us.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And we're back to talk more about the business of living with estate planning attorney Althea DeBar Johnson. What we're really talking about today is taking care of our families by being proactive and taking care of our affairs. If we can change the framework of how we think about estate planning, not just think about it in terms of death and dying, but think about it in terms, really, of taking care of our families, taking care of our affairs, and really showing love to those people who matter most. We were inspired to have this conversation by the COVID-19 pandemic and the thousands of lives that have been taken. But even without the pandemic, it is something that we all need to be thinking about, and not just thinking about it, actually doing something about it. Before the break, we were talking about ensuring our final wishes are set in stone by preparing a will. We also touched on the topic of children and how those children are our biggest asset. And Althea, even if you are a grandparent or a guardian that's raising children, and that is the case in so many families today, we still need to be thinking about what happens to those children if something happens to us and we're no longer here.
Sure. You know, I've spoken on quite a few seminars, and I've gone to assisted living facilities, and one of the biggest things that I have noticed is that you find that a lot of grandparents sometimes are taking care of their grandchildren. And I tell the seasoned citizens that most of us think that we should be preparing our estate, our wills. And that is true, but you need to go back and talk to your adult children who may not have a plan or have any estate planning in place. Because what I'm seeing now is that the children, they are passing away for whatever reason. The grandchildren come to live with the grandparents. A lot of times the grandparents are fixed income. They cannot afford to manage and care for the children or their grandchildren. The children haven't left anything to help the grandparents take care of the children, so they can't live the same lifestyle that they are accustomed to living when their parents were alive. So the parents, the grandparents need to talk to their children about taking care of their grandchildren. So everyone needs an estate plan, and especially if you have children, because you need to make decision as to how your children are going to be cared for and who they should be, who should care for them.
We think we're going to outlive our parents. And
absolutely,
we're focusing on, you know, planning for in case something happens to our parents, and we don't always think about the fact that something could happen to us, and we precede our parents in death, and we've got, you know, minor children who now need to be cared for, and who is going to do that and how. So
I
really, that's an excellent point.
Yes. It's just something to think about, Jennifer.
Oh, it is. It is definitely something to think about. And this is why we're having this conversation, because we wanted everyone, including ourselves, to think very broadly about our lives and about what we should be doing and about what we would like to happen if for some reason we're no longer here and we can't, obviously can't make those decisions after death. So while we're here and we do have that control, we would we just encourage everyone to take this conversation seriously and have those tough conversations that we may not want to have. It's breaking through that barrier, as we said earlier, breaking through that barrier.
Absolutely.
Of procrastination and fear and all the other things that hold us back from taking control. We like to take questions when we can on this show. And before the show premiered, we spoke to a couple of people who were really excited about the fact that there was going to be an attorney talking about these important matters. And I wonder if we could ask you to respond to a couple of those people.
Sure.
So Jerry in Athens has a question. And her parents are deceased. Her mom passed away recently with no will. There is a house, there's property, there's even a safe deposit box that she and none of the other siblings can access because mom and dad have both passed away, and they both passed away without a will. She wants to know what steps she and her siblings should take to begin the probate process.
Well, I think the first question I would have for her is that, who passed away first? Did her father pass away? And did he have a will or did he not have a will? Because depending on what he did will affect what the mother basically received. So if father passed away first, he did have a will and he transferred most of his assets to his wife, then that's a little bit easier. But the question becomes, did the wife, if she's the named executrix, did she file the will in the probate court? If he died without a will, then the distribution of his assets are different. That means she and the children have a share in the father's estate. So we may have to go back to the father. Yes. We may have to go back and probate the father's estate to come up to probate the mom's estate. Since she died without a will, again, her assets are divided between the children. But again, it depends, since the father passed away first, how are his assets distributed? You know, Jennifer, a lot of times I get the street committee who will kind of try to know the law more than I do. So you have clients that come in and the street committee have already advised them as to how the assets should be divided. So I had a client, she passed away. A client came in, her husband passed away, and she assumed, based upon what the street committee said, that she would get all of her husband's asset. And I had to inform her that no, it does not automatically pass to the spouse if there is no will. It will pass to the spouse and children if there is no will. And so she was really shocked because she actually was part of a blended family. She and her husband had been married for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
They bought a house, had other property, had bank accounts, and he passed away without this will. And so from his previous marriage, had three children. She was shocked to know that she had to share her husband's assets with these three other children. And, of course, they didn't get along. And, of course,
oh my goodness.
they objected to her becoming the administrator of her husband's estate.
Of course.
And, of course, she had to share his assets with these other three adult children. And she was quite upset. But
there is so much
you can't
to
go
think
by
about.
What the street committee says. Yeah.
No, you can't. But I'm glad you brought that point up, Althea, because that is something that I think is important for us to talk about for just a moment, and that is so often we have these people in our lives who think they know the law,
mm-hmm.
and will profess to tell you this is what should happen and this is what will happen. In my own family, I have a family member who is taking a criminal justice class at a university here, and she was telling us over Thanksgiving dinner who is going to be the next of kin and how that would flow in terms of who benefits if you know certain people were to pass away. And of course, I learned it was not true. So I think that's a very important point. I mean, we're laughing, and it is, you know, it can be funny, but actually it's not, because legal matters are so important that you can't entrust
yes.
them to yourself. You can't entrust them to someone who does not have a law degree. And even if that person has a law degree, he or she may not necessarily be proficient and an expert in estate planning. So that's just something very important for us all to think about.
That's
we
very true. I stay within in my lane, and I don't do criminal law, and I certainly don't do tax law, bankruptcy law. This is what I do, and I would tell your listening audience that you need to get someone who specializes in this area of practice.
Great advice. So in the time that we have remaining, there's one other aspect of both, I think it's both lifetime and death time planning, and it's something that we've touched on briefly, insurance. What should people know?
Yes.
What should they do about insurance, both for lifetime and for death time planning?
Sure. I think insurance is an excellent estate planning tool for us. We can get enough insurance so that some of our bills are covered. So, for instance, most of us come from a two-person income family. And if one person or the spouse passes away, then we're down to one income, but we still have the same debts. We may have a mortgage. We still have bills. We have car notes. We have our children to take care of. And to have a life insurance policy in order to at least pay off that mortgage, to have enough of a life insurance policy to maybe take care of some bills, that is so mm-hmm. beneficial for a family when we are going or we're suffering or we are in a daze and don't know what we need to do or what we can do to maintain and carry on our family life, to maintain that lifestyle, to maintain the standard of living that the family is used to. So a life insurance policy enough to cover mortgage if we have one, to cover bills, to take care of final expenses, and our funeral expenses, and to help the family to position on. I think it's very important. But we also can use that life insurance policy, Jennifer, in order to help out with some of our living expenses while we're here. If we build up enough value in our policy, and maybe at 60 or 70, we have some medical issues and we cannot afford to pay them, then we can use the value in our life insurance policy to pay off those medical debts, or to take that trip that we've been longing for. And still there's enough to cover our family after we are gone and pay those necessary final expenses. So you can use life insurance, your life insurance policies, for better living while you're alive, or take care of those bills, some bills while you're alive, and to take care of your family members after you pass away.
That is so important to know, because often we think about just getting the life insurance through our places that, you know, where we work, and we may not think about all the ways in which life insurance could help us and to your point, make our lives better. So I really wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about that, and that is part of estate planning. We may not often think about life insurance as part of our estate planning, but you're saying it definitely is.
It is, and it's easy, because you can buy your policy now, and, of course, the money is automatically deducted, and you can buy enough insurance to take care of those circumstances when they arise.
Well, thank you. And thank you for all of the great information that you have that you've shared with us during this hour. Believe it or not, we're out of time. Hour goes by very quickly, especially when you're getting great information like we've had today. It's so valuable for all of us. Thank you for spending an hour with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So we've been having a critical conversation, really critical conversation about estate planning with attorney Althea DeBar Johnson. Althea, will you come back again?
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure. And I just want to say that thank you for having me. I hope this has been helpful, and I hope you and your listeners live a full and remarkable life.
Thank you. Thank you. We all need that. And while we're living those remarkable lives, we want to make sure that we're taking care of the business of living, which is what your law firm likes to say about estate planning. We all want to make sure that we're taking care of that. So, again, thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us this incredible information and empowering us with information.
Sure.
Enjoying the conversation? Subscribe to the show at www.uptomeradio.com for free giveaways, contests, show information, and announcements. Podcasts can be heard from the Up to Me Radio website or any of your favorite free podcast apps, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and TuneIn. For a full listing, please visit the Breaking Barriers show page, again, at www.uptomeradio.com. Stay connected with us. All the time that we are away from you, you can still stay connected to Up to Me Radio. Follow us on Facebook at Up to Me Radio, Instagram at Up to Me and Radio, and also on Twitter at Up to Me Radio. We love hearing from you. We love you staying connected with us while we're away. And as I mentioned, right before we close, I want to say that Breaking Barriers, the conversation will continue next episode with Business of Living attorney Tamara Wood, who is a partner in the law firm of Althea DeBar Johnson. Ms. Wood specializes in complex trust and will also talk to us about what we should be doing to get ready for the next tax day, which, as you know, has been rescheduled for July 15th due to the pandemic, but it'll be here before you know it. Please plan to join us. Don't miss another opportunity to learn how we should be taking care of the business of living.